Hello, I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. Financial Literacy Month is still in full swing. On the show this week, we're going to look at how confident Canadians are with their financial literacy skills. A study from PC Financial looks at some nuance in terms of the varying levels of confidence. Certified financial planner Jackie Porter is going to talk about those findings and share her tips for building financial resilience. Then, helping people rebound from financial hardship. A new reality show called Opportunity Knocks is pairing six families with an opportunity coach. That coach is going to help them overcome their challenges and connect them with the tools and resources that will make a difference. We're going to talk to one of those coaches, Jean Chatsky. You've probably heard that name. She's been the financial editor at the Today Show on NBC Time. She's written a bunch of books. It's our pleasure to host her on Moolala. And how would you like your groceries delivered to you in less than a half an hour without having to step in a grocery store? Sure, it would be convenient, but boy, it's got to cost some money. We're going to be talking about this, the rise of these immediate delivery services, not like, you know, groceries that you book 24 hours in advance, but ones that deliver in under 30 minutes. We're going to talk about how it works, how much you pay. Nicole Verkint is the CEO of one of these services. It's called Buggy. Plus, mortgage strategist Rob McLister is here to talk about collateral mortgages and some of their pros and cons. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Let's get started. The reality TV genre has been around for decades now, right? Most of it fluff and fun, super fluffy dating shows and vocal competition shows and bake-offs. Nothing is out of bounds. But not all of it is merely a guilty pleasure. A new reality show is helping six families break free from financial hardship. It's called Opportunity Knocks, and it streams on PBS Passports, also online. It pairs each family with one of the series' opportunity coaches. Jean Chatsky is one of those coaches. She is the CEO of HerMoney.com and was the financial editor of NBC's Today Show for 25 years. She joins us now. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce. How are you?
I am very excited to hear about this series. I have long believed there was a big role for people like you and me, personal finance people, to engage in this genre, as I say. Tell us about Opportunity Knocks.
So you gave us a very nice introduction. Opportunity Knocks is helping six families wade through the stumbling blocks that have impeded them from reaching their goals, accomplishing what they want in their life. I mean, these folks are stuck in many cases because they've had student loan debt, they've had businesses not work, they've had medical issues, all the kinds of things that happen to real people every single day. They often just don't know where to turn, but we're coaching them through. We're helping them find opportunities to break through and get their lives moving in the right direction. And I don't want to make it sound super easy because it's not, a lot of what we're asking of them is not super easy. There are tears involved. There are hard choices to be made. There are frank discussions about priorities and what you really want and why maybe you have to give up some of those things that you spend money on or you use your resources or your time for that don't line up with your goals. We're going to need you to focus. We're going to need you to choose. But in the end, I don't want to give it away. I'm feeling pretty good.
That's good. Well, people who watch HGTV have a very different view than people who have produced HGTV. Because if you've produced one of those shows, you know that you race in there and slop the paint on and, you know, zhuzh the space and stage it to the end of the earth and it looks gorgeous. There aren't a lot of shortcuts when you're trying to transform people's mindset about money. I want to ask you about Lauren and Jared. So this is one of the couples that you worked with, and you really engaged with Lauren on a question she had about being a stay-at-home mom versus working and bringing in an income for her family. Tell us about how that conversation went.
It was tough, you know, and it was tough for me to ask it of her, quite frankly. I could see how much she was enjoying the time that she was spending at home with her kids, with her two kids. But the fact is, when I looked at this couple and their big goal, was to buy a home of their own because they had moved in with Lauren's parents during the pandemic. Mm. Lauren's mother, very happy to have them there. Lauren's father, very happy to have them there. But, you know, these folks are adults and they wanted space of their own. And of the two people in this couple, Lauren and Jared, Lauren has a master's degree. Her earning capacity at this point is higher than her husband's. And she wasn't making the most of that. And the road that she was going down, although she was gaining a little bit of traction, wasn't going to get her there as fast as they wanted to get there financially. So I was asking her to make a hard choice, to think about whether there was a way to use her advanced degree to go back to work while pursuing her passions, while still spending time with her kids. I mean, she was very fortunate that remote work is a thing right now. But it wasn't a question that she wanted to think about. It was a question that she had been, I was not asking her a question that she wasn't somewhere deep in the recesses of her mind asking herself. I was just asking it out loud.
We talk a lot on this show about the distinction between knowledge and insight and how literacy and financial literacy can do great things to empower humans to have the knowledge they need to make decisions. But insight is the wow. The light bulb is the wow. Tell us about the moment for her when that light bulb clicked on.
I don't think for her it was a light bulb, quite frankly.
Okay.
I think for her, it was something she already knew but didn't want to deal with.
Okay.
And so in that moment, I was holding her accountable for something that she already knew.
And this question of trade-offs is brutal. I mean, you were engaging with that couple at a very foundational level, and then that family and millions of families across this continent are dealing it in a very tactical and tangible level with what do they put in the grocery cart?
Yes. Yes. And how do we deal with the fact that prices are so much higher than they were a year ago now? And how do we, I actually feel like, and I was pulling together some notes for a segment that I'm doing on CNN in a couple of days about Thanksgiving and about how do we make Thanksgiving more affordable. I feel like we got an education during the pandemic in how to shop and cook and get scrappy like our grandparents. You know, like we were so accustomed to being able to run into the grocery store for the three items that we forgot. And by the way, then buy 10 more before the pandemic. And when the world shut down, all of a sudden we had to make a list. All of a sudden we had to meal plan. All of a sudden we had to cook. All of a sudden we had to eat our leftovers, right? We were doing things in a much more thoughtful way as consumers that I hope that we'll hold on to, because it's those skills, it's those behaviors. It's not feeling like you got to go to the gym, but that if you put on your sneakers and you go for a nice long walk, you're still getting your exercise. Mm-hmm. It all of those things are going to get us through this bout of inflation.
You have been appearing on television for a very long time. You would have had 3 minutes, 4 minutes, maybe five on a good day. What did this longer format afford for you as someone who's made it her life's work to make a difference for people in the area of money?
It enabled me to dig, to really listen. Hmm. I mean, you know this as a podcaster, so I do a podcast as well. We have a podcast called Her Money. I hope your listeners will check it out. Hmm. Our interviews run 30 minutes. And I love that. It gives us space to breathe. If you want to explore, you've got a tip about where to find a high interest rate savings account. You don't just get to say, put your money in a high interest rate savings account. You right. get to say, this is how you find one. And this is who has it. And here's how it works. And here are the restrictions. You get to dig a little bit more. And when it comes to people and their money, and I'm a big believer that personal finance is more personal than it is finance. Mm. You have to figure out what those people want, what's driving them, what's personal to them, because it's very different than what's personal to me. And my job as a coach on Opportunity Knocks, or anytime I'm doing work with real people, we work with real people in our Finance Fix coaching program at Her Money. And my job anytime I'm working with real people is to get them what they want, not to prescribe what I want for them.
There is something called an opportunity finder, which is a part of the website. I love that phrase. Now, obviously, Canada is different than the US in terms of the services that you might find, but I think there's something really compelling about highlighting resources that exist that people have never even thought of. They don't even know about them.
Yeah, the Opportunity Finder is a tool that allows you to plug in your location, your zip code, and it will tell you about the tools that exist for you locally. So tools that can help you get a business off the ground, tools that can help you find better deals in financial services by working with organizations that put the consumer front of mind, like credit unions. I mean, it's just connecting the dots for people in a way that the dots have not been connected before.
You spent a lot of time on that show, I can tell. What was the high point for you about engaging with humans in that way and working with those families in that way?
Well, I don't want to give away too much here.
Oh, Bruce. Come on!
There is a point for, I think, all the families, not just the families that I worked with, but the families that Luis Barajas worked with and Patrice Washington worked with, where they see possibility. You know, they see opportunity, but they see possibility and they feel that they can. And that's a biggie, right? Once you get out of the muck and you feel like you can, the whole world opens up and the weight, and look, financial stress is incredibly real. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we look at studies on stress in America, financial stress is at the tip top of the list. It's at the very top of the list, except for people who are dealing with a major health crisis. Mm. But for everybody else, pretty much, finances are on top. And this program and the Opportunity Finder can help people alleviate some of that financial stress.
What would you say is different about the world we find ourselves in today versus, say, 10 or 20 years ago? And I don't just mean the very current and acute issue of rising inflation and rising rates and geopolitical uncertainty. If we take it to a higher level to look at a couple of years, how would you characterize what people are dealing with now that would be different from when you got going in this game?
the level of financial responsibility on the shoulders of individuals is so much greater than it has been for any previous generation, right? You look at prior generations, they had pensions. They knew that they were going to have an income stream that would take care of them for as long as they lived. Many of them had health insurance that came with the job. I mean, you all in Canada, we look at you and we're just like, please. Yeah. But we have been asked to shoulder so much more responsibility for our own financial lives than prior generations. When I got started, and I'm going to age myself right here on your program, but when I got started, we weren't even allowed to know what our credit scores were. Like, that was just becoming a thing. Now we have the responsibility for managing those in addition to everything else. And that's a lot to ask of people, right? It's a lot to ask of people in a world where they don't get any training or education in how to be good, responsible financial citizens.
I love that you use the word possibility, because I think it's first accurate and second so inspiring that they were able to see that for themselves. One of the challenges is that as consumers, we see a lot as maybe not possible, but as a potential for us to spend on. We would have called it a decade ago the HGTV effect. We would call it today maybe the Instagram effect, when we know what a gorgeous kitchen looks like, and it's not my kitchen. My kitchen is not the one on Instagram. What would you say to folks who are trying to reconcile what they want versus what they can afford versus what they feel entitled to?
Oh, so you make it complicated when you throw that last wrinkle in there. Yeah. Look, I know enough about you to know that you lean pretty heavy into behavioral finance. And we've learned a lot about our own psychology and why we're not great with money, why we are so subject to impulsivity to spending and to getting things now when we know that we should be waiting. I think that we need to always outline for ourselves some priorities, what are the things that you really want? What are the things that are at the top of the list for you? And then we need to lean into technology to help us automate our way to those things. The further away they are, the more we need automatic transfers into a series of accounts that can help us get there. Because if we have to make a good decision every time we're trying to put money away, it's just not going to happen. So, 401ks work, 401k your life, as much as you possibly can. And when it comes to the entitlement factor, you asked the question, so I want to try to answer it. I think you got to go back and ask yourself, why do I think I'm entitled to this? Why, what is it about it that makes me entitled to it? If you truly believe that you are, and it's something like more money from your employer, then I think you really go out and you advocate for it. But you are going to have to prove your case.
There are many systemic barriers for so many underrepresented groups in both of our countries, and so many things systems-wide that just don't work and that just aren't fair. I tend to focus on the individual. I tend to focus on what's within our circle of control, because makes me want to cry, all those things. So as we think about the individual, and if you could snap your fingers and cause, be a catalyst for one single shift in mindset, one single unified light bulb for all of those hundreds of millions of people that you connect to, what would that be? What would be the shift in mindset? What would be the insight that you would flare up for them? What would be the change?
Money isn't hard. Mm. Money is actually fairly easy. What's hard is the habit of doing the right things with your money. And so if you can get yourself, and I wouldn't go fast, right? If you can focus on one healthy habit that you want to adopt, whether it's saving more, whether it's spending a little less, whether it's learning how to invest, whether try to bring yourself along the curb, but realize there is no rocket science. There really isn't. I mean, if it looks like rocket science, it's probably not something that you should be engaging in anyway.
Yeah.
It's all about good behavior, often repeated.
Jean, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for your service. I hope you know the profound impact you have had on millions, probably hundreds of millions of people over the course of your career.
Now you're going to make me cry.
Good. Well, there it is. Jean Chatsky, thank you so much. Jean Chatsky is one of the opportunity coaches on Opportunity Knocks. Google the name of the show and PBS, and you'll find out where to watch it. She is the CEO of HerMoney.com and spent 25 years at NBC's Today Show. Coming up next on Moolala, I'll speak with certified financial planner Jackie Porter about a PC financial survey looking at how confident Canadians feel about their financial skills. And later, a look at an immediate grocery delivery service, like we're talking super, super fast. It's called Buggy. Its CEO, Nicole Verkint, will be here. Don't forget, we've got a newsletter. You can sign up for that newsletter at moolala.ca. It covers all sorts of stuff that we do on CBC and CityLine and BNN Bloomberg.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Welcome back. Moolala, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. How confident do you feel about your financial literacy skills? I don't know. It's a pretty broad range for Canadians. PC Financial recently conducted a survey for Financial Literacy Month, hooray for that, to see how Canadians feel about their financial future. It found, I don't know, surprisingly, that 3 in 4 Canadian adults are actually confident in their skills. For more on some of these findings, and to talk about building financial resilience, I'm joined by certified financial planner Jackie Porter, founder of Team Jackie Porter. I feel like that could be like a t-shirt, Team Jackie Porter. Hello, Team Jackie Porter.
How are you? I missed you.
It has been a long time. It's been a very long time. So I want to ask you, what did you take away from this survey? I have survey fatigue. I get pitched them all the time. Please tell me what you think are the most relevant insights from this one.
You know, I think it's so encouraging that Canadians are feeling more confident. 3 in 4 Canadians are feeling more financially literate. And I think that's maybe a fact of the information age that we're in. You can Google most things now, and the younger generation certainly are more savvy than I am. on navigating that, because I found even younger Canadians were way more tech savvy and way more, you know, in tune with understanding financial products, understanding their finances a little bit more. What struck me though was, you know, we get a hard C in the industry for only 66% of Canadians actually feeling confident about their future. And, you know, Bruce, there's so much going on right now with all of the uncertainty that we're dealing with around the economy, around job security, around inflation, interest rates, name it. Like, we're in the soup of uncertainty, right? And I think that that's probably an area where we could do better. And then finally, we get like a D, because only 44% of Canadians said that they felt that they had the right tools to help them become more financially literate. And I think, you know, that to me begins and ends with where their money is. And for a lot of people, their money is in a bank. And I think that sometimes with bank accounts and, you know, where you withdraw and deposit, you don't necessarily pay as much attention as you should, and you don't always necessarily have the resources. So I think these are some things that Canadians have to think about is, first of all, you have choices over and above the big banks. You don't have to always deal with the bank, big banks, if they're not supporting you on your financially confident journey of, you know, being better with, you know, where your money is and how it's doing. So I think there's lots of tools out there, and some of the tools I love. I'm a huge, you know, rewards points fan. So I love the fact that, you know, PC Financial has tools, apps to make you a lot more financially confident and financially literate. Because ultimately, you need to know not just where your money is, but how your money is doing. What's coming in? What's going out? You know, I think budgeting is the big word these days, right? Does anybody know how much money they're spending, especially since COVID?
Yeah, a lot since COVID, in part because we, you know, we think about money in our home differently. And now that the world has started to open up, people are traveling and buying. I think I bought a shirt for the first time in 3 years. It's amazing. I want to include this topic of financial resilience in here, because there's literacy, you know, like ABC, you can understand the words on the page, but then there's something much more difficult to accomplish, and that is the ability to withstand all that life throws at you.
Yes.
How do you think Canadians can improve financial resilience?
Well, I think it starts with, you know, having an honest conversation, because as you said, the spending dragon is back and we're finally able to gather again. And that means being more social and spending more money. And it feels good to spend money, especially with other people, now that we can do that. And I think that there's this temptation to spend first and think about it later and not necessarily think about the future. Great example is, you know, we have the holidays coming up, Bruce, which is just in a few weeks, and the temptation to spend has never been greater. But everybody's had holiday hangover when the bills come in January, February, and then you start thinking, can I afford this money I just put on my credit card? And interest rates have gone up, cost of living has gone up, you know, job security, who knows, do I have an emergency fund? So I think the resilience starts with, you know, first of all, looking where what you're doing with your money, doing a budget. And if you've got tools that can facilitate that, if you have, you're dealing with a bank that can, you know, show, help you put a budget together, and you can start to see where your money is going on a weekly, monthly basis on the go, it can inform you about your financial decisions and maybe veer you away from making financial mistakes as you go along, right? Because the worst thing is to get to the end of the month and realize, oh my goodness, I've overspent and now I've got money on a credit card because I don't know how much money came in. I don't know how much money went out. And now I'm struggling to figure out how I'm going to pay for the credit card.
What are some of your tips that would enable people to stretch their dollar further? Inflation is ridiculous. Interest rates are so much higher. What are some things that you would
I would say start with, you know, that one of the silent killers, going back to the banks for a second, check how much you're spending on things like banking fees. Have you ever seen that notification that you get sometimes by email or in the mail where it says, our banking rates have changed? Change normally means
more. But is that really worth your time? Because I'll be a contrarian here. I don't care about banking fees. I do not care about banking fees. I want a convenient experience. And the reason I don't care is the dollars simply don't add up to anything compared to me buying a second shirt. So I bought that one shirt. If I were to buy a second shirt, that would in all likelihood exceed the banking fees that I would pay it over the course of months, maybe even a year.
It depends, because it all depends on the kind of bank setup you have. If you have a certain amount of money in your account, you may not pay banking fees, and 30, 40 bucks a month in banking fees add up to what could be, you know, money.
A really nice shirt. Okay, so banking really fees, nice. I don't know. Banking fees to me is the whole latte myth. I don't really buy it. So give me another one and then I'll judge it. I'll judge the next one you have.
But 30, 40 bucks a month adds up, and it could
be. Who pays that?
You'd be surprised. People don't look. And it all depends on the kind of banking setup you have and what you started paying and what you're paying now. So I'm just saying, pay attention.
All right.
Number two is those subscriptions. It's all the things that add up silently that you're not looking at. Those subscriptions that you might have done over COVID, you know, the Netflix and the Shopify, you know, that Shopify, the Spotify, you know, and all of the music subscriptions that you just kind of let, you know, the fact that you have things come to your house, the Amazon Prime, all of these things, again, they silently add up. And this might be money you don't even realize that you're spending, and it's just gone. And you kind of think, could that money have been put away somewhere else that would have given me peace of mind? Because again, this is your money. Is that where you want it to go? Is that the best use of your finances right now as we're dealing with uncertainty? This is your money. You decide how you want to put it to work.
What is one practical behavior that you walk the talk on when it comes to your money? Go.
Rewards. I absolutely love getting money on money I actually spent money on. Like, so if I can make the money I spend make me money, that's to me the best use of my resources ever. Because then at least gives me money to splurge on. That's not money I had to work for.
Do you pay your credit cards off in full every single month?
100%. 100%. Okay, do not let, this is why we started off talking about the budget, because I think if people don't do the math to see, especially because of COVID, you might have been spending less while you were at home with our finances in lockdown, and now you're spending more. But do you know how much more? How can you actually have any serious conversation about your finances without having this money conversation with yourself, even if you're doing it on the back of a napkin?
I'm glad you clarified, because one of the things that makes me nuts about the rewards conversation is that people are so obsessed with them that they forget that they need to pay off their credit card in full every month before they do everything. And I talk to a lot of people who are giddy about the rewards they earn and pay zero attention to that outstanding balance.
No, you start with how much you're spending, and then you put that money that you're spending to work to make you money. It's all about OPM, other people's money.
Ooh, how much OPM? All yeah. Right. OPM,
how much of it. Other people's money can I use? Because at the end of the day, I can only work so many hours a day. I can only work so hard. So right. Put my money that I'm spending to work. But the other part of it we were talking about with Christmas coming and being resilient is make a plan, right? With money that you're spending mindlessly. We talked about subscriptions, we talked about bank fees, and put that in an investment account, put that in an emergency fund, put that towards your future. Because if you're just spending in the moment, keep in mind that the future comes faster than you think. Like I said, that January bill, like if you start spending and you don't have like a spending plan for like things like Christmas. You get to December 24th and you're in the store. And you're using your credit card and it's all emotion and everything means something. You have to buy that thing from Matt because you're going to.
Oh, my gosh. Jackie, I wish we had more time. We've got to wrap it up there. You've got me anxious about Christmas shopping. Thankfully, I have like two people on my list and that's it. We've completely eradicated gift giving in my family with two exceptions, and I'm grateful for it. Now, Christmas eating, on the other hand, is unlimited, unrestricted. Jackie, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. So plan ahead, folks.
Plan ahead. Jackie Porter, certified financial planner and founder of Team Jackie Porter.
Hi, it's me, your debt. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up later, mortgage strategist Rob McLister takes us through the pros and cons of something called a collateral mortgage. But first, Nicole Verkint, CEO of Buggy, tells us how the grocery delivery service works to get you your stuff in under 20 minutes.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Nowadays, people want things now, immediately now. Whether it's social media, whether it's streaming, whether it's delivery services, you know, food, merchandise, whatever it is, it needs to be now. And that is increasingly about immediate delivery for things that, you know, you usually just waited for 12 hours or 24 hours. Buggy is a Canadian service that delivers other essentials, groceries and other essentials, in as little as, I can't even believe I'm saying this, in as little as 15 minutes. It's ridiculous. I feel like I should have tested it before we had our next guest on. How do these services work? Are they worth it? Should they even exist? Nicole Verkint is the CEO of Buggy, and she joins us now. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce.
I know you're like, should we even exist? Why did he invite me on if he's questioning my very existence? Let me start by asking, how does Buggy work?
Honestly, we get that question all the time. We've even had customer support questions come in and say, but seriously, how does this work? The big innovation is that we own our own inventory. We set up very small micro warehouses around dense cities. So if you take Toronto, for example, we would have multiple little 1200 square foot locations that are storing the essential items. So grocery and essential. Then we have a live inventory feed to the app. So when somebody opens up the app, they only see what's sitting on the shelves in that exact location that's near them in that exact moment. They put it in their cart or their buggy. And our pickers will pick it in under a minute because of our mapping technology. So it's going to map them around a really efficient path in the micro warehouse. And then we have couriers sitting there with e-bikes, and they go right away. So you said 15 minutes, you couldn't believe it, but our average delivery time right now within a 2 kilometer radius is in the 7 to 8 minute range. So
Could I possibly need? That I must have, aside
coffee.
From a stretcher.
Coffee.
Well, that's just bad planning. So what are some of the biggest items that you sell?
Ice cream.
Ice cream. Is there a particular flavor of ice cream?
Yeah, half-baked Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Half-baked Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Okay, so immediate delivery of ice cream. What about, I mean, I am a parent. I can imagine in those early days, I could have really used, diapers,
yeah.
Creams.
We've got all the core baby items, pet items. Anything, if you look at the SKUs on Amazon, where you... when you run out of it, you really don't want to wait next day. It's those items where, because I have to wait the next day, which seemed so lightning fast before, because I don't want to wait that long, I'm just going to go outside and walk or take a cab or go to the store. It's any of those.
What's the cost for the consumer? How much is that coffee compared to if I had just planned better and got it at the grocery store?
It's unbelievably cheaper than you would think. It's way cheaper than any of the third-party apps. So Instacart, any of these other apps where they're shopping in a store for you, because they're going into that store and they're marking that up 25-30%. When you're buying from our stores, we're buying them at wholesale prices. So we have a partnership with a major wholesaler in Canada. It's Sobeys. And we buy at wholesale prices. We mark it up to the in-store price. So you're going to pay the same in-store price.
And then is there a delivery fee?
$2.99, but if you buy more than $30, there's no, it gets waived.
And how big a business do you think this is, really? Because it is pretty geographically targeted. You need some density.
You need some density, but it can be a massive business. If you go to Europe, every major city in Europe right now has many companies like this. They're up doing in the billions of dollars of revenue. They only started a few years ago. There's a company in the US that has completely taken over. They've taken most of Instacart's market share called GoPuff. They started delivering vapes to, you know, college students on college campuses in the US. And then they expanded into core grocery items. They don't do a lot of produce. We do a lot of nice produce, but they have over $1 billion in revenue and only really got going a few years ago. So consumers get addicted to this.
I love that you mentioned vaping, because here's what I'm going to assert. I'm going to assert with a smile and a wink, but I'm going to assert that you and companies like you, yours, are enabling bad behavior. You are fueling the instant gratification that is so problematic in our society today.
I agree. I mean, people don't want to wait. People are behaving. And as soon as you have a service like this, you start relying on it. And as soon as you realize you don't have something, you can just rely on it. So I agree. It is kind of a window into the soul of humanity and where we're going. But I mean, I've seen the data, I've seen the retention and repeat rates of orders once people start. And I mean, I could think of worse things to be addicted to than fast delivery of food. Mm.
Well, if I were the king of the world, what I would do is ensure that you could not get a buggy account if you carried $1 in an outstanding balance on a credit card. Would you be willing to sign up for that? Would you be willing to filter your clients based on that criteria?
I absolutely would not. I mean,
of course you wouldn't. I wouldn't either. But I think what I want to point out from a personal finance standpoint is that so many Canadians are, they're rewarding their current self at the expense of their future self to their detriment. We know credit card balances are ridiculously high, and our consumerism and our instant gratification is a big reason why.
For sure. I don't disagree. But I do think people don't appreciate how much all of the third-party apps, I won't list them all, but I'm sure you can think of them, that send gig workers out into stores to bring you stuff, how much more expensive they are.
How do your staff work? Are they proprietary e-bike riders?
They're full-time employees. And Bruce, there's a labor crisis in Canada, and we put job openings up online and had 700 plus applicants for each store when we were opening up our first stores. So there's huge demand for people who have been living off of gig work to have full-time, you know, meaningful employment. So that's been really interesting.
Are you 24/7 at these locations?
No, we're 16 hours a day. So we're 9 till midnight.
9 till midnight. So if you want coffee for the next morning, you better put your order in by 11:42 or you're not getting it.
Or you just realize at 8:40 that you're missing it. And there you go.
Oh, by 9 o'clock, my day is done. If I don't have coffee by 6:30, my day is done. When you look out 5 years, and I think one of the things we should put a fine point on is the innovation of the dark stores and you own more of your supply chain than other competitors. What is the innovation that you're seeing in other markets around the world that you hope to bring to Buggy over the course of the next 3 to 5 years?
The first one is data. We're already getting unbelievably insightful data that doesn't really exist on other platforms. So partnering up with brands, introducing independent brands directly to consumers. So being able to use data to get some even more interesting insights. The second thing is widening out that service offering to be able to offer under 15-minute delivery for D2C brands. So an entrepreneur starts a jewelry company that maybe is popular.
You need that engagement ring in 12 minutes for sure. You can't wait. That decision, when you are inspired to propose, that needs to happen immediately.
Well, that's probably not, that wouldn't be a good example. It's a little too expensive. I know you're making fun of us now, but it's the last mile fulfillment. I think that this model makes more sense than these huge, you know, million square foot, fully robotized warehouses if you're trying to get something to somebody quickly.
You said coffee, but I think you meant to say condoms.
Yeah, we sell a lot of pregnancy tests, condoms. Yes, there's a lot of
I can see that. Well, Nicole, thank you for joining us and for talking about the model. I think it's fascinating. I think I've probably ordered from Uber Eats once in my life, so I am so not in your demographic. I have a little pantry in my basement. Thank you, pandemic. So if you need coffee, you can come to me. Or you can go to Buggy, because I won't deliver.
Oh, thanks, Bruce.
Take care, Nicole. Great to talk to you. Nicole Verkent is the CEO of Buggy, one of an increasing number of services that deliver stuff, I think, immediately. Like anytime you're using time spans like under 15 minutes, I think I'd call that immediately. Good thing, bad thing, I don't know. Wish them luck. Stay with us. Coming up next, everything you need to know about a collateral mortgage, which is probably a product you're going to need if you keep buying stuff on these immediate delivery services. Mortgage strategist Rob McLister takes us through it. Nicole's still here. She's rolling her eyes and shaking her fist at me, I can tell. For more of Moolala, you can head over to moolala.ca. Past episodes are there. You can search by name. You can search by topic. On the podcast platforms, we're on Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, wherever you listen to them. You can download the full show, a segment, write a review, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Mortgages, 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 so many terms, so many types, so many details. It is an area in which I like to be what I call a temporary expert, which means that for the period of time in which I'm shopping for a mortgage, I learn all there is to know, and then I promptly forget everything. So we're going to add to my temporary expertise by talking about something called a collateral mortgage. Interesting idea, important product for some people, not for everybody. We're going to find out the who, what, when, where, why with mortgage strategist Rob McLister. He is with MortgageLogic.news. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce. How are you?
I'm great. What is a collateral mortgage?
A collateral mortgage. Well, you know, it's basically just a different way that lenders register a mortgage on your home's title. And so like when you get a mortgage, a lender has to have security in case you don't pay. And so they register a mortgage. So a collateral mortgage is different than the more popular mortgage type, which is a standard charge mortgage. It offers pros and cons, which I'm sure we're about to get into.
I'm sure we are. What are the pros of a collateral mortgage?
People get collateral charge mortgages mainly because their lender offers them. A lot of people, you go to like an RBC or a TD, your lender is going to offer you this collateral charge mortgage with this great benefit of being able to refinance, get more money, borrow more money anytime without a lawyer. And that means you save legal fees.
And the cons?
And the cons are, number one, it often costs you more to switch lenders. And so with a standard charge mortgage, you can generally switch lenders and you don't have to pay the legal fees and appraisal fees. Very often with collateral charge mortgages, you have to pay the whole boat if you want to switch. Now, it's getting more competitive out there. So there are some lenders that offer rebates. And there's a lot of banks out there right now offering cash back. So a lot of people use that cash back to pay their registration fees when they change lenders. The problem is there's no free lunch. So if you're going to get $3,000 cash back on your mortgage, odds are you're paying a higher interest rate.
Who is this particular type of mortgage for?
Well, there are legit benefits of a collateral charge mortgage. And we talked about how you can refinance without a lawyer. Readvanceable mortgages, which were one of the more popular mortgage types out there, let you reborrow as you pay down your mortgage. So, if you pay $1,000 on your mortgage and $700 goes to principal, you can actually reborrow that $700 out of a line of credit with a readvanceable mortgage. And people like that flexibility. They'll use that money for investments or, to buy a sailboat or whatever they want to do with the money.
My blood went cold when you said that. That's exactly the wrong thing to do.
Well, maybe they have a sailboat business, you know, and they're chartering and making. But you know, that's, they're very popular. The government's actually looked into it because they're so popular. A lot of banks push them because, you know, readvanceable mortgages are sticky. Generally speaking, the borrower stays more often than not with a lender with a readvanceable mortgage because, you know, they like that line of credit aspect. It's more expensive to switch. So
how do rates differ typically?
Generally speaking, it varies drastically depending on which lender and the type of product. But generally speaking, you'll pay at least about 10 basis points more for a readvanceable mortgage, which again is a type of collateral mortgage.
And what about other collateral mortgages?
Well, I mean, some collateral mortgages have a line of credit attached to them. Okay, like popular ones like RBC, Homeline, you know, TD Flex Line, Manulife One, that type of thing. They have
Is Manulife One a collateral mortgage?
Yes.
Okay. That's a very helpful note because I think a lot of people know what that, they might not know it as a collateral mortgage, but they might know about the Manulife One product.
And that's a special type of collateral mortgage. That and the National Bank All-in-One have a checking account built in. So they actually have a different benefit in that, you know, whatever income you have going into that checking account offsets the borrowing in your HELOC portion. So there's that benefit. But yeah, I mean, you know, readvanceables also give you the ability to borrow more if that's your goal as your home value rises, because in many cases, the lender will register the mortgage for a greater amount than you actually need at closing.
What temperament does the borrower need to have such that these products serve their future self? Because as you've been describing, and I tease you about the sailboat, but as you describe the benefits to the borrower, it actually really worries me because I can imagine that some people would have a really, really hard time making any progress on their mortgage when they can borrow it back.
Yeah, you know, there are people that abuse them, that get out of control with borrowing because the money is so easily accessible. But there's people with a pistol that'll shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, there's just, you know, you can't take products off the market because some people are irresponsible. That said, I agree with you where you're going here. You know, you got to kind of warn people how easy it is to rack up debt on these things. And, you know, some people get to a point where they're paying interest only and they just get in that, you know, rut for years.
So what would you say about temperament? If certainly the circumstances would be easy to paint the picture in which this would be really helpful to you to have one of these, but you'd need to have a particular, I don't know, temperament or set of characteristics that would have this work, because otherwise you are never going to make any progress.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, you know, get these things and, like I said, just keep racking up debt and hope that their home value goes up and offsets it. And generally speaking, that's the case. But to, you know, to your point, you need someone who is disciplined. You know, hey, listen, if you want to go out and buy a big screen TV on your HELOC today, because you know you're getting, you know, a $50,000 bonus at work next month, you know, knock yourself out. But generally speaking, you don't want to keep racking up faster than you can pay off, obviously.
What, so we know the 20% of the home value is a pretty important number in today's context, given CMHC qualification. What are the other, are there any different requirements when you look at collateral mortgages? Anything that would be notable for the applicant?
Yeah, with the, you know, a regular standard charge mortgage, you can go up to 95% loan to value. There's actually workarounds where you can actually borrow some of your down payment. I don't recommend that, but you can go even higher. With a collateral charge, readvanceable mortgage from a mainstream lender, you know, you can go up to 80% loan to value. So there's more of an equity buffer there that lenders require. And they're also typically a little bit harder to qualify for because there's, you know, technically more risk to the lender because you can, they're revolving, you just keep reborrowing.
How common are these? Like if we were to be looking at market share, is this 5% of the market? Is it 30% of the market?
Yeah, it's north of 30% for, you know, prime lending. It's I don't have the exact number, but it's a very fast growing product, so fast that the regulators are worried about it. And they've done a lot of work, you know, to analyze the product. And we saw not that long ago, they, you know, kind of regulators, OSFI, buckled down on readvanceable mortgages, such that, you know, you used to be able to borrow up to 80% loan to value on the HELOC portion. And, you know, when you paid it off, you could borrow more. Now, the regulators require that if you're above 65% loan to value, whatever you pay off has to stay paid off until you get down to that 65% loan to value level.
What's the compensation on this particular type of product look like for a mortgage broker versus traditional? Is there any sweetener for them in terms of the number of basis points they earn?
Well, there, I mean, you're compensated in different ways by different lenders. So for example, you can, on the line of credit portion, you can get compensated like a one-time fee, maybe a quarter point, up to a half point. Sometimes the lenders will compensate you on the total limit, which might, you know, for shadier originators out there, might incent them to encourage you to get a bigger limit so that they get, you know, 140 basis points or 100 basis points on that total amount, even though you don't need it.
Interesting. I gotta like add the buyer beware signal here, especially in a time in our Canadian real estate market where values are in flux. It was somewhat easier a year or two ago, and it's like, oh my God, your house is gonna go up forever. It's gonna be great. It just doesn't feel like that's the case today.
Yeah, you know, some people are feeling some pain with these products because on a HELOC specifically, you know, you've seen rates go up 350 basis points and, you know, payments literally more than double on these things. So now it's not all end of the world, you know, for folks that have a lot of equity, got big lines of credit, you know, even if you lose your job, you could still use the line of credit to make your payment.
Yeah,
nobody wants that, but it's better than defaulting on your loan.
100%. Rob, thank you for your time today.
Always a pleasure, Bruce.
Rob McLister is a mortgage strategist, and he's with MortgageLogic.news. Our focus of our conversation, collateral mortgages, the who, what, when, where, and why. That's our show for today. A thank you to our sponsor, Credit Canada, the longest standing credit counseling, nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. To get in touch with us, simple to do, email. Old school, email ask@moolala.ca. Please send us your comments, your questions, your story ideas, your feedback, all that stuff. If you would like to subscribe to the Moolala newsletter, simple to do that at moolala.ca. On social media, I am at Bruce Selry on Twitter, Bruce Selry Moolala on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.